Welcome to Top Stock Picks. This is the 29th day of June 2017, and I am your host, Jay Taylor. I'm here to bring you some microcap investment ideas from various newsletter writers, primarily those that are involved with the Metals Investor Forum. And this week I have with me John Kaiser. Thanks for joining me, John.
Jay, it's a pleasure to be on the show with you.
Always good to hear your ideas. You certainly come up with novel ideas, interesting ideas, which makes for an interesting program. So I should say before we get started that folks listening to this should go to kaiserresearch.com, Kaiser, KAISER, research.com. Well, John, I know a name that you've been following for quite a few years, and I did too, but then I kind of gave up on it, is Midas Gold Corp. Trades in Toronto under the symbol MAX, I believe. 180.5 million shares trading today, down a bit in a weak market today, at down to about 69 cents Canadian, giving it a market cap of around 125 million Canadian dollars. And this their primary asset there is a Stibnite gold project, which is a gold antimony project. Give me an update on that and tell us why that's one of your top picks now.
Well, Midas Gold has been a top pick because it is the most advanced gold project in the United States. It has an antimony byproduct credit. The stigma against the project has been it's in Idaho, surrounded by a wilderness area. And you ask yourself, why was this never included in the wilderness area itself? Well, this property, the stibnite, and stibnite is the mineral that has antimony in it. It was what kept the American war effort supplied with antimony during World War II, and also into the Korean nor in the Korean War, when China was not able to produce because first of the Japanese invasion, and then of course its alignment with North Korea in that conflict. China is the primary producer of antimony, and the government. The operators made a mess of it at the time. And then the gold guys came in the 60s and 70s and made an even bigger mess out of it and ruined the salmon spawning ground. And it's not quite bad enough for Superfund treatment. And it's not cheap to fix. So when the Midas Gold Group came in there and pieced it all together with the surrounding ground and the core block, they knew that if this was ever going to be permitted, they were going to have to turn around this environmental disaster. And Stephen Quinn, the CEO, has called it, this is really a reclamation project funded by a gold and antimony mine. And although there was a lot of skepticism in the beginning, these various NGO groups and the local recreational use groups are all coming around to the idea that the plan the company has come up with makes a lot of sense to restore this area back into being a productive salmon spawning region and to also provide America with a critical domestic source of antimony because China is shutting down its operations. I was just on the project on a site visit, and it was not until I was physically standing there and looking at all this that I fully understood what a huge difference building this gold mine is going to make for this whole area.
Have can you give us an idea of what the resources are there, and have there been some economics done on this project, John?
The company did a PEA a few years ago and then updated it with a pre-feasibility study in 2014. And this is going to be a 20,000 ton per day open pit operation. That will produce 4 million ounces of gold over 12 years and about 100 million pounds of antimony. Now, this was actually down from what the PEA predicted, and this is why I'm now quite excited. The PEA used historic drill holes, but the consultant, SRK, said, well, for the pre-feasibility, we can't use these old holes. So they lost a whole bunch of high-grade upfront antimony and gold ore. That would have been a good cash flow. The problem with this project right now, which is why I've called it an optionality, is that the NPV using their $1,350 gold price is about $800 million using 5%. But we only have $1,250 now, and at that price, it's only worth about $300-$400 million. CapEx is a whopping $1 billion, and keep them $100 million. Is part of that whole reclamation, which has to be done up front,
Mm-hmm.
afterwards. And they have to have a pressure oxidation autoclave in there because the ore is refractory. However, they have been doing infill drilling and bringing back those ounces that they lost in the transition to pre-feasibility study, bringing them back into the reserve. And they have a resource update by the end of this year. They expect to have the feasibility study done by the end of 2018 with a permit in hand by then. But I think by the end of this year, we will see the numbers show that even at 1250 gold, this thing has an NPV approaching $1 billion and, of course, an IRR of over 20%, and it will be developed. Now, the exciting stuff is there is a lot of upside. There will probably be 10, 15 million ounces eventually dragged out of this project by the time it's done. They've got all these other areas where they're poking in. It's like just single holes, sort of scout drilling holes, and saying, oh, there's mineralization here too. Well, we'll have to pursue that later when we have this original mine up and running. And with regard to the antimony, one of the things that's intriguing is that they're starting to understand the high-grade vein nature of the antimony, whose mineralization came in after the gold was placed down. So they're kind of overprinted in the main open pit stuff, but they also project into the mountain elsewhere. And they will be able to drive underground adits into this to chase it. And to me, this was huge because they're only going to produce 8,000 tons a year of antimony as a byproduct. And America consumes 25,000 tons, and global output's at 180,000 tons, and that's shrinking. So just the open pit gold mine's not going to solve America's problem if push comes to shove with China. But with this ability to drive adits in and pursue the high 1 to 2% veins, there is an awful lot of antimony that, in a pinch, could be dragged out of this whole region and fed into the antimony circuit of the overall operation. So to me, this was a real eye-opener to understand that they could produce a lot more antimony, but only if this entire operation is approved and put into production.
Oh, very interesting. Well, so John, can you give some sense of how important is the antimony in the economics of this project? Based on current prices, never mind antimony could be a lot more expensive, as I understand you're saying. The Chinese may be producing a lot less of it, and they're the major producers. But let's just say, based on current prices of 1250 gold, I don't know what's antimony selling at now.
Antimony is about $4 a pound. So this is not a huge percentage, like it's less than 10% of the revenue. However, if we end up seeing antimony go to $10, $15 a pound because there's a supply crunch as China cuts back its production, this could become a significant component. But its main value is it makes this more than just another gold mine that, adds another 4 million ounces to the world's, 6 billion ounce stockpile. Antimony is really important. It's a flame retardant. Clothing you get from China has antimony in it. It's also in lead acid batteries, but also it is used in munitions. Tin is an alternative. It's a more expensive alternative, but the antimony, its flame retardant property prevents I guess the gun firing as quickly as it otherwise would, which as a result allows it to have more power and send the bullet farther. So antimony is key to the whole sort of defense equation, unless you have a big pile of tin available to make your munitions from.
Well, it seems as though what you've got here is a reclamation project, I guess, and you were saying that that has to be fixed up front, John. It's not at the end of the project, but they have to fix the damage that was done by prior operators first. But by so doing, I suppose maybe there's a better chance of getting everything permitted then and being able to actually put this into production.
Yes, and the upside, most optionality plays, you need something like gold going to $2,000 or better to put the project into the money. But this one is so close that a mere sort of $250 move to, say, $1,500 gold, which is what, 20% or so, that has a profound impact on the economics. And this is like I'm talking about a real price increase, not suddenly we've got, 50% inflation because, gold will go up. but then so will the costs of building and producing the
Right.
gold. But in this case, with the geopolitical stresses that we're seeing in the world, and a $300 real price move is completely imaginable. This stock right now, which sits at 70 cents, would be worth $5 to $8 with a mere 25% increase in the price of gold. And of course, with all the potential for much bigger resources, a major would want to buy this out. They're not going to do so until the permit is in place, because you know what happens. You have Barrick suddenly own this project, and suddenly the permitting burden goes through the roof. So they're all sitting back. We have to be patient with this. But if gold starts to move, this will track a modest gold price very, very well. And if I'm right that they are bringing back those ounces and increasing the upfront cash flow, I think at 1250 gold, we will see a $2 to $3 price easily justified. And that would be like a fundamental improvement, not something that depends on gold going up to make you money. By the way, you mentioned 189,000 shares, million shares issued. Fully diluted, it's 343 million, because in January of last year, the company bit the bullet. John Paulson of the Big Short fame, he came to them and said, "I like this project," and wanted to give them a lot of money. They raised $55 million in the form of a convertible debenture that basically pays nothing. So in essence, you have to kind of include this. It was at 35 cents. And Paulson took down about 35 million of that. It is probably the best gold investment that he has in his portfolio since 2009, when he shifted his focus into this area. So the numbers I'm talking about are based on 343 million fully
Oh,
diluted.
okay. That's good to
And
know.
so they're now funded right through to delivery of the feasibility study and the permit. They bit the bullet. They did it just when the market was turning, so it's kind of frustrating. But we don't have to worry about them diluting us when suddenly gold drops $100 and they're in a crunch and have to raise the money to keep this permitting cycle going.
But just one more question, John. You mentioned that I think you said the CapEx would be $1 billion on this. How far is this current management team ready to take this? Is the strategy to find a big guy to come in and take it off their hands at a fair price, or what are they planning to do?
A junior is not going to raise $1 billion.
No, that's exactly right.
So a Barrick or a Newmont, both of them with experience with refractory
Sure.
ore in Nevada, one of them is going to take out Midas, I think, once the permit is in place. And the what they're doing now, like drilling all this other stuff and showing it, here's the extent of this system. This is telling the guys, okay, we're not just buying $4 or $5 million of production over the next 12 years. We're probably buying another 10 million ounces down the road. And there's no point delineating these and turning them into resources now, because then you would have to go back and change the mining plan to include it
Yeah.
and create a further delay. But for smart geologists who are seeing what's happening there, they say, wow, this is going to be a big one. That's why Franco-Nevada bought a royalty several years ago, and this gave them a big injection of cash, because they see, yes, this is going to be a long-lived mine, much longer than 12 years.
Yeah, it's hard to get a better endorsement than Franco-Nevada, that's for sure. Well, it's really interesting, John. Thanks for updating me on it. I hadn't been following this one for some time, and it certainly does look like it has some great potential, notwithstanding it's 343 million shares. But yeah, it's very interesting. Thanks very much. Now, I understand you have a couple more that you've talked to us about recently. I think perhaps the last time you were on with us. SK Mining is one. Can you give us an update on that one? And then Scandium International and Atomera. I'd like to hear what you have to say about those three.
All right, so SK Mining was supposed to be drilling by the middle of June. They did get their deal with Silver Standard signed. Because of the heavy snows we had this year on the west coast, on the northwest coast, they were delayed getting going in that on that SIB project. But they have now got everything built. They're ready to start drilling. And remember, they're drilling these 1,500 meter sort of angled holes, starting in the garbage rock, the Bowser Basin sediments to the west, and drilling in at an angle to intersect the Eskay Creek stratigraphy that's
Mm-hmm.
been tilted on its side and that's buried under, and where they think it's going to be, where it's buried under 400 meters of a sort of garbage rock. They're looking for the iceberg from which the Lulu tip was detached by a thrust fault. And Carl Edmonds is very much involved. He's the Silver Standard exploration manager. He worked on the Eskay Creek project itself. There is potential to find another Eskay Creek deposit here, maybe even bigger. And if they found something like that today, that's worth over $3 billion Canadian on the same sort of great terms using today's costs. So even though Eskay Mining owns just 20% of this at the end of the day, this could be a very high impact discovery, especially if finding Eskay Creek 2 up in this area happens. Then there's a much bigger range of this prospective formation that people will be chasing after. Because right now you think, okay, Eskay Creek was a freak. We thought there would be more, didn't find any. But you find another substantial Eskay Creek style VMS deposit, and then it's going to be game on in that region to find more of the same.
All right, there's 107 million shares. Does that sound right? 107 million
That's
shares.
about 125 or so fully.
Fully diluted. Currently selling at 35 cents today, down a bit because it's been a weak market. All right, Scandium, which is really, I think you're probably your top pick of everything that you're following still. Is that right? And give us an
Yeah,
update on it.
this one's frustrating. Almost everything has been de-risked in the last 4 years. It is now a better buy than it has ever been. It's sort of faded back to 33, 34 cents. They have got their mining lease. And what several weeks ago, the 20% partner, which is Scandium Investments LLC, made the decision, we are going to convert our 20% project interest into a company equity stake. They will get 57 million shares. The key principals are Peter Evanson and Chris Evanson, brothers. And Peter just resigned from TK Shipping, which he was with the last 10 years, and basically took them to $2 billion revenue. Whereas Chris Evanson used to work for Drexel Burnham in the 80s, then founded Canyon Capital, was part of a hedge fund, which he retired from about 10 years ago. So these guys see this as not just another, turn $2 million into $200 million. They see the scandium as, hey, this is something that's going to make a difference in the future, because if this works, it opens the floodgates for aluminum scandium alloy, for lightweighting anything that moves. If you can use aluminum scandium, it'll be lighter and it'll cost you less fuel, so it'll save you in the pocketbook. And also, if in the climate change debate, it will reduce carbon dioxide emissions, because you're not moving as much airplane mass or car mass or train mass if you have aluminum alloy available. So right now we got to wait a couple months until the special meeting is general meeting has happened to approve the issue. This will give them 20%, and that makes them the largest shareholder. And I think they will be able to raise the 100 million needed to build this without any great difficulty. It goes from being sort of a ex-BHP employees managed companies followed by a lot of small people, like a people's type play, to it'll shift into the big hedge fund world of the American markets in about 2 months.
Wow, how long have you been following this one, John? It's one I know you've for a few years, perhaps a couple of years at least.
Well, in 2010, when the rare earth boom was just taking off, I first heard about it and recommended it, and then it crashed and burned, and they nearly lost the asset. So it was in early 2014 that I rolled up my sleeves and really crunched the numbers and said, wow, okay, this is how this is going to work. And I started really supporting it. And in the process, through basically my sources, the company raised about 6, 7 million that enabled it to bring the project to this stage. And a lot of my, I suspect most of my subscribers own this stock. And it's gone from 3 cents to 30, 33 cents. So we have a 10 bagger there for those who bought in the beginning. But this is the kind of project that if this funding comes in, even if it involves issuing several hundred million shares, this thing, because we're talking about a deposit that we're going to start with 40 tons a year of output, this can scale to 120 tons a year, and plus they have another one just right next to it. So if they can demonstrate that we can produce it at this cost and sell it for this price and then scale up production to whatever you need, and the $2,000 a kilo turns out to be acceptable to the off-takers, this can go from a piddly little 10-ton a year market worth maybe $50 million to being a 1,000-ton a year market worth $2.5 billion, similar to what's the case with niobium right now, which was in a similar pickle until in the 60s the Araxá deposit in Brazil was discovered, and it was much bigger and richer than any of the small bedrock sources that niobium came from before. So niobium could not be a steel's favorite alloying agent until there was a large scale resource. And we're repeating that now. And because everybody gets it, the ramp up to 1,000 tons will be a lot faster than people expect than it took with, say, niobium to happen in the 60s.
Oh, it's very interesting. Okay, one more I'd like to ask you about Atomera. They are, I guess, hitting the kind of structures that they were looking to hit that they think should be prospective. Fill us in on Atomera. I know you've talked about that one recently as
Yeah,
well.
not just to give a very brief background, Atomera was in Northeast Washington saying there's got to be a lot more gold than was found by the others and largely mined out. Kinross's Buckhorn mine is now shut down. There's no operating mines in that area. And they pounded away during a tough bear market and did not have huge success. But then last year they said, let's look at the geophysics of this. And they developed this theory about the well, we'll fly this air electromag survey over the known deposits and the surrounding area while we're at it and see if there's some sort of signature. And they discovered, yes, there is a mag anomaly associated with the known deposits, the mined out deposits, as well as an EM, a conductivity signature. And then they found all these other ones in open land that have never been drilled. And they say, well, I guess nobody ever bothered to do an electromag airborne survey. So they've been out there scrambling, staking this stuff, doing groundwork, getting geochem. And this first one that they just drilled, they intersected 7, 8 meters of magnetite with sulfide in it, right close to where it was supposed to be. So whether there's gold in it, that you cannot tell until you get assays. But they were quite excited because their model for gen or their approach for generating targets appears to be valid, and they've just gotten started, and they'll be drilling through all of the summer. They managed to raise $1.7 million by having accelerated a expiry of a whole bunch of 10-cent warrants. So they've got the fuel in the tank, and this is one I'm watching for a discovery hole this summer. And if they get it, then this one, even though it's got 120, 30 million shares out, it does have 100%. There is the old Buckhorn Mill, or Kettle River Mill, as they call it, now idle, waiting for feed. So even if they don't come up with a glorious couple million ounces, only come up with 500,000 ounces, it's going to find a home in that to be processed in that old Buckhorn Mill.
How soon, John, do you think we might hear about these assays coming back from these early drill holes?
Well, this market has become really, really hostile to assays that aren't fantastic. The Arizona Silver that I was all excited about a little while ago, the first hole came back empty and the stock tanked 90%. This is just the first of many intersections that they will have. I wouldn't like hold my breath. Could expect 3 week turnaround. So it could be next week after the long weekend, we could expect results from that. This is the kind of stuff where, well, if it's good news, then let's get excited. If there's nothing in it, well, we just stay patient. There's no reason to bail now because they got all these targets teed up. They're in there going to hit them one after other systematically. And the only thing to worry about is come November, and none of them have had anything in it. Well, then it's time to be sad. But right now, this is the type of junior that is perfect if you are focused on discovery exploration and kind of pessimistic that gold's going to do anything exciting on the upside until maybe later in the fall.
Yeah, it certainly has a tremendous amount of upside with some good drill intercepts. I would think 114 million shares, 17 cents Actually, one of the few I see up today a little bit in a very bad market. So, well, thank you, John. Anything else to add, or just other than, I just tell my listeners, check John out, because you can tell from what he has to say in our little discussions here that he knows a lot about the companies he works on. He works very hard. I know that's true. It's KaiserResearch.com, KaiserResearch.com. Go there and consider subscribing. John, maybe before we go, just tell our listeners a little bit about your service. What do you offer? I think a couple of different levels, right?
We have the Kaiser Research online membership, which costs you $800 a year if you take the annual package. This gives you access to the search engine that will allow you to search through whatever up a couple thousand companies that are in the resource sector. It also gives you access to all the bottom fish recommendations, and then I have the Spec Value Hunter service, which only costs $250 a year, but when you sign up for that, the first 90 days, you get access to everything. And that's the sort of 12 or 14 formal recommendations. Of the ones mentioned today, Midas and Scandium International are Spec Value Hunter picks, so you'll get your coverage of my coverage through that subscription package. And the other two, Atomera and SK, they are bottom fish picks. I would elevate them to Spec Value Hunter recommendation status if I got like an intersection that says, okay, this is now discovery delineation. So this is my approach, is to higher risk, scout these things out, put them on the radar for the people paying for the larger package. The loss risk is high, but so is the gain risk. And then when these things start to connect, then I introduce them to the Spec Value Hunter audience, because now we know it's game on and it's not going to just wither away, which, SK Mining could fade away if by November they've hit absolutely nothing. But once they hit, that story's going to run. So it might be better to buy it at 60, 70 cents when the evidence is on the table that this play is happening, than to buy it now at 35 cents and risk it going to 10 cents because they come up with nothing.
Good advice, John. Thank you so much for being with us again, and we'll look to do it again sometime in the near future.
You're welcome, Jay, and thank you for having me on your show.